All right. Let's see, where were we now? We're dealing with the Ross Hardy case, which is, of course, the notorious case, I guess, on this campus of all cases, the Black Martin being one, and then the Ross Hardy case, all of which are in the same time period, I think, that we're discussing now, if I'm not mistaken. Ross Hardy, as I say, has spoken probably a little bit more than he should, and as a result, I think the administration said, this man has got to go, this man's got to be dismissed. And so that's when many faculty came to rally around him, in the sense of even, if necessary, faculty were willing to take up a collection of money to help him in any kind of a defense that he would need with an attorney. Now, all the details of that case, I don't know, nor do I want to go into, because I'm not in a position to do so. But I would say at this point, the Ross Hardy case should be definitely explored and should be on tape.
Now, Irv, was there an actual defense committee, or is that something that this other committee then took up?
To me, it was sort of an informal type of thing, if I remember, because I recall Howard Kimball was very much involved, Dick Wilde was very much involved. I was to a degree involved in the sense that we met with various individuals to find out what could be done in the sense of Ross Hardy. There were some of us also, and I was one of them, that even went south to San Diego. I even talked to people on the Board of Education, the State Board of Education, as to what could be done, because we were disturbed that there was no way that we could get justice on the campus. There was no way we could get faculty government on the campus. And was there anybody that was willing to stage an investigation? See, this was the big thing. And, of course, as we know, the big climax comes, I think, what is it, 59?
Tell me more about some of the things that you did directly when you started.
All right, in those years, in San Diego, I contacted a woman who was a relative, Howard Kimball and I did, it happened to be his aunt by marriage, who was principal of the school in San Diego, who had a rather close association with Roy Simpson, and she knew people in education in the state of California, to see what influence she could have. You see, we were out looking for people that might have influence, that could eventually get to Roy Simpson's ear, whether she had any influence with him in the sense of making him aware of the fact that what he might have heard from the administration on this campus might be quite different from what the faculty saw and from where the faculty felt and the way the faculty interpreted the events that were going on the campus. So a number of us did that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some even went to a name that isn't, it does not, at this moment had the ring that it did back then, but Dick Hanna was now involved in the Korea Gate scandal, but it was at that time, and we must forget what the present is. Dick Hanna was an assemblyman in Sacramento, and a number of us, Art Metzger, who definitely should be interviewed, one of the first faculty, and who probably has a detailed memory of what happened because he was so involved. We saw Dick Hanna to see what could be done in the interest of this institution for faculty government, even with regard to Peterson, if an investigation could be eventually instituted.
And these moves came after the charges against Ross Hardy then?
I don't remember, Sherna. I just, in the sense that the years from 52 and until the dismissal of Peterson, for me at least, are years that sort of blend together because they were years that were very, very difficult. And you forget whether you did one just after 52 or you did it in 55, 56. That's why I believe that a person like Ross Hardy, who could give you the exact years, a person no doubt like Seaman, who would have the details on the Martin Black case, a Metzger I'm sure would know, and definitely Howard Kimball, who has kept papers on it. And I thought would have them to me by this morning. He was going to get them for me because he has them at home. But
Now, Irv, let me ask, when you made these, for instance, when you went to San Diego, when the committee of you went to see Hanna, was there a strategy being planned by a whole committee, or did each of you just sort of volunteer, well, I know so-and-so?
Well, let's say we were a very informal gathering, at least to begin with, until we got that, it sounds bad, the FARC committee up there. The Faculty Administration Relations Committee. We tended to be operating rather informally. It's sort of, in a way, I suppose one would be reminded of the way cells operate. As you see, quote, revolutions get started. One man in my department, Howard Kimball, probably will say to me, he says, everything I learned about revolution, or if I learned it from you, which is kind of unique because I'm a very, very calm person. But he thinks that he learned revolution from me, and I think on tape I would deny that. But in the sense that I was concerned, and I think people also felt that I was an individual that didn't rush off on tangents. And I think it also concerned the administration, as I talked to Peter Stephen in later years, that he felt that I was misinformed, that I was being led by others, that I was, quote, that youngster, that young one. Would have been led by older people.
You were, in fact, viewed by other faculty as being really playing a central role.
Yes, I think so. Many of them saw me as being involved and with a significant conviction.
Mm-hmm.
Because it did concern me that people, and I really had not had that experience, but that people could be fired without cause. And when I had all these reports from students that these were good faculty people, I will never defend a person whom I believe is ineffective. And I have seen people that remain in our faculty that should have been fired. You know, I look at it that way and say, long ago they should have been gone. So it's not the case that I believe that just because I'm a faculty member, every faculty member is doing the right job. No. Because I've taken positions with dismissal of people that made me unpopular too. So that I understand. But I believe that you also give a person a reason for the dismissal and that you write it and put it in writing. We had nothing put in writing. And it was for the sake of the profession, I think of faculty as a group, that I became greatly involved. Sharna, it's amazing. I look back and I don't know that I recognize myself in that role. You see, to me, I'm not that involved today because I feel my energies must be directed into things that are what I call constructive.
Mm-hmm.
As I look back then, I think it was a constructive role because I have to look at it historically.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a group of us were doing something that we believe were in the interest of faculty and of this institution, and that for the future and for future generations, we were doing something that was meaningful. But it's hard for me now, years later, 20 years later, to say, Irv, did you really play that role? You know, it's unique. I guess because I see now, there are still faculty that believe, and you'll notice if you interview some of these names of which I've given you, they'll still believe that there is an administration-faculty fight going on this campus. Now, you see, I don't see it that way anymore, though I recognize that there are problems that exist. But I've had such an excellent rapport with our present president, Steve Horn, and know how open he's been with me and the kinds of conversations we've had, that I fail to see. Now, it may be that, again, I have blinders. But I fail to see that there is, not that he doesn't make mistakes, because to be human is to err, but it's a question of forgiveness, you know.
Now, tell me what happened in those two contexts, with the cousin, and then also when the committee of you went to see
Hannah?
Hannah.
Yes. With the cousin, basically our role was to describe what was happening. It was a descriptive thing, and to see whether or not she could have her own personal, well, her own influence personally or with people that she knew that could get to Roy Simpson. Our frustration was, how do you get to Roy Simpson? See, this was our problem. Because after all, Roy Simpson had appointed P. Victor Peterson in his position as president and likewise believed in him. And I think if I would say, in fairness to Roy Simpson and to Dr. Peterson, I can well understand why Roy Simpson would believe this. A man that's in Sacramento is certainly going to have to not see things, or will not see things, the way people in the local scene see it. There is a case involved here that we should mention, and I don't know the exact years, and that's the reason why I'm going to leave it until I can get documentation. But a man by the name of Barkey, does that name ever come to your attention? At Stanford University, a professor of education, and an outstanding individual was brought to this campus to assess what was going on.
Oh.
So we need to know, and I was hoping that Dr. Kimball would get this information to me, but he didn't.
But it sounds like that must have been a response.
Yes. Whether we ever had any part in it, I don't know. But nevertheless, let's put it this way. What we were doing in meeting this principal of the school, cousin one of the faculty members, was knowing that she was respected, that she was a woman who knew Roy Simpson, and what she could use in the way of influence to make him aware that the problems at Long Beach are greater than you believe.
Mm.
It's not just a tempest in a teapot. Similarly, with Hannah, our interests there were essentially, I think I could say this, though I'd like Howard Kimball or Art Metzger to speak to it more, and I think Art Metzger probably being prominent in Democratic circles, got the appointment for us to meet with Hannah in his offices, his law offices in Fullerton, as to what could be done, legislatively or otherwise, to see that faculty can have something to say with what goes on in the campus. Are we just people that come and punch a clock, or are we really people that have an opportunity to make decisions? And I don't know exactly what influence Hannah had. I think he played a very important role, but I cannot tell you what it was. I think this is for a Kimball or a Metzger, who were strong in Democratic circles themselves, and therefore met with Hannah a great deal and had his ear. I just simply went as one for one meeting, just simply to let him see that this wasn't just a couple of faculty, but were a number of faculty members. I also think I went along too because I had been here since the institution was founded, and then apparently the feeling was, well, here's a man that has some perspective of what's been going on.
Did it seem in that interview or meeting with him that he was somewhat aware of the situation, or did it seem to come out of the blue?
All right. A degree of awareness, but not that much. A legislator is not going to get it unless their constituents write to him. Some faculty had begun writing. So to that degree, he was informed. I think our meeting with him, at least the one meeting I was, at which I was present, was more to give him information. And in gathering that information, he in turn might be able to see that a problem did exist. And I guess our concern was, could he use pressure where pressure would be effective? Pressure on Roy Simpson, pressure on, if necessary, legislation that would probably bring about change. That was our hope.
Now, were you in contact with people at any of the other state campuses? Were there problems?
No.
Or?
No, not at that time. Basically, you know, as we look at that period of time, there weren't that many state colleges. The ones that were in existence were the older ones. Some had been founded, like Cal State LA. Cal State Fullerton, just about ready to be founded. But or probably already founded at that time. It has about, I guess, a 20 years existence now. There may have been faculty members in contact with faculty members at other campuses. We did organize, now let me put it this way, I probably should retract that to a degree, and Howard Kimball can give you more on this. There was an organization called ACSUP. It was then called ACSCP. Because of the college, the Association for the California State College Professors, now the Association for the California State University Professors, ACSUP, and Howard Kimball has been active in that all these years. Now, I'm glad you brought up that question because it jogs my memory in this respect. A number of us got involved in ACSCP, now called ACSUP, which was a organization of faculty from all your campuses. This was the way that you could engage in what you might call committees of correspondence, to use American Revolutionary terminology. People were able to find out what was going on in other campuses. So you say to one faculty member, oh, you're from San Diego State. How are these things handled on your campus? And we found things that amazed us through ACSCP. Now, Peterson hated ACSCP. He had met it when he was a faculty member and an administrator at San Jose State. I forget how far back ACSCP went, but it probably was either pre-World War II or thereabouts, or just immediately thereafter. When faculty and the California State Colleges were no longer going to be a group of recalcitrant individuals and sitting by, they decided to organize. That organization isn't as popular now in a sense of faculty going to it, but I think it was a very effective organization, and I still belong to it. Through that organization, we were able to exchange information with faculty and to discover, to our dismay, the way things were handled at other campuses. So most of the state meetings of ACSCP dealt with, quote, the Long Beach situation.
So through that organization, from faculty.
That's right. And I think we should mention that to belong to ACSCP was almost a kiss of death on this campus. The president, President Peterson, looked upon it as a radical group. it would be looked upon almost as the IWW, I suppose, or whatever radical group you might think of in labor circles. And that's the way it was seen. And if you wanted to be in good favor with not only him, but with others in the administration, you stayed away from ACSCP. And what's interesting to this day, the people that are very active in ACSUP now are Kimball, Hardiman, Peters, Metzger. You just start going down the membership. And I'm still in it, though I'm not very active. Mm-hmm. I don't go to the state meetings, but I am a part of it. And I think right now the big thing with ACSCP, ACSUP, which just had a meeting last weekend at Pomona, is our concern yet for do we have any say-so about admissions of students to the campus, priorities, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a good organization, but at that time, its real interest were faculty rights, and still is a big interest. A group that's not out just to say we want more money, but it's never been its purpose. It's never been out fighting for fringe benefits. It's been out saying, what are the rights of faculty? What is academic freedom? What is tenure? The things that really faculty should concern themselves with. And that type of a group was anathema on this campus. Ross Hardy was a member of that group. The people that were in good standing were not members of that group. So if you want to speak about a network of exchanging information, I would say it was through them, the ACSCP.
Now how about AAUP?
No AAUP on this campus until, I would say that probably didn't come until, probably the 1960s or later. Even with UPC, some of these other groups are much, much later.
So it sounds like you were making these individual forays trying to get contacts and get to the legislature and also to the Department
of
Education. And then a network of other faculty.
That's right, other campuses. And of course other campuses were keenly interested because essentially the feeling was, if it can happen to you, it can happen to us. And another group that I belonged to, which was called the History Guild of Southern California, it seemed as if you never went to one of those meetings, but somebody said, tell us what's happening at Long Beach. This was the favorite question. And to many of them, what was happening here would be referred to as horror tales. Some said, can you tell us another horror tale?
What about the community, the local community itself?
All right, the city of Long Beach, we tried to make some contacts in the city of Long Beach and found it very difficult. Some of us went down to even talk to some of the members of the Ritter family connected with the Long Beach Press Telegram and found ourselves really not making much progress in the sense that the people we were contacting tended to be people in the field of management. And to our dismay, but to our discovery, we learned that management tends to support management. And I think many people in the world of business in the city of Long Beach saw the problems as an employer-employee relationship and the fact that they did not see that Peterson and the administration also were employees of the State of Board of Education, so the State Department of Education. So therefore, we didn't get much in the way of a sympathetic ear. Now, there were some, and I wouldn't know which, I think Art Metzger would again be the individual to contact, who contacted people in labor and labor union officers. Mm-hmm. And with them, of course, they came to see the plight. And they, of course, again, we see the other side of the coin. They tended to see it as either management saw it as an employer-employee kind of a conflict, but were sympathetic toward us who were conceived of as being employees. So there were contacts made of that nature. I think people tried to get, I went to members of the community to write letters to the members of the State Board of Education to plead with them to really take a good look and bring in some kind of a team that would be impartial to take a look at what's going on and not to, quote, whitewash at all times what's going on the campus.
Was there an uproar in the community when the charges were brought against Harding in terms of...
No. No, in fact, there was little sympathy. To my knowledge, Ross could tell you more, but to my knowledge, it was it sort of fit in with what many who had that kind of interest in the campus, who might say, well, that's what we thought. There were some of these professors that were off base, and the president is simply doing a job of cleaning up the place, that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we were looked upon, the faculty that were involved in anything, were looked upon as, quote, radicals, and even referred to a time that little, that we were a part of a little red schoolhouse on the hill. So if there's no other charge, it would be, you know, radical left, that type of thing that were involved. And yet what's interesting is because within us, we represented the whole spectrum politically. You know, it wasn't, because it, problems create strange bedfellows. Mm-hmm. And you may be way apart politically or philosophically, but when there's a common problem, you find unity. And that's what many of us found in the situation. And I have not kept company with many of them since, because our unity is no longer there. I don't see eye to eye with some of them and things they continue to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not the type, and I think probably I should say that, you know, I pick a bone and then I want to keep playing with it as a dog. I think some of our faculty are of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
A good fight is exciting. I don't like that type of thing, but I believe in taking a stand when it's essential to take a stand. And I think I did during those other critical years.
So you had all of this activity attempting to get some outside intervention.
Yes, that's right.
Into the situation.
That's right. Which we felt was going to be ultimately the only solution, that it could never come from what we were doing on campus, that we had to get pressure from the outside. And I think the kinds of pressures that ultimately came could probably be told by the people that I mentioned about Metzger or Howard Kimball. Though Howard Kimball is interesting because he said, you know, I can't believe the blow-up came when I was in England. He was on a sabbatical leave in England and heard about it. And that amazed him that, you know, Peterson was leaving. And that surprised Kimball.
From your point of view, then, what was the sequence of events? There was first the Martin Black, then the Ross Hardy case, and increasing organizations to try and get some outside.
Yes, that's the way I see it.
And then how did it proceed to develop?
As I see, and this is where I'm a little bit hazy, sure, and that's the reason I wanted some documentation in the way of paperwork, which, as I say, I think Howard Kimball has, is to know exactly when we finally got Roy Simpson to meet with Peterson and to save face to have Peterson announce his retirement.
Now, you see,
he was not fired.
Mm-hmm.
He retired. And there again, there's some that probably know. I do not know how that really came about and who, and this would be delightful, and I don't know whether Roy Simpson is still living or not.
Mm.
But, you know, a man that could probably give us a, and yet he may not share it, I do not know. But how it was that the kinds of pressures finally got there, and I, in many ways I think when Ross Hardy won his case, you know, there were all kinds of threats, and Ross Hardy can tell you this, I think he was ready to sue Peterson, he was ready to sue Roy Simpson, he was ready to sue a variety of people, because after all, what had it done to his character?
Mm-hmm.
And also the fact that many people continue to say, and probably will say even to this day, there probably was some truth to this. And you know how people will do. A charge is made, and if a man's been charged with being a communist and everything is clear, there will still be people who believe that he is or was. And similarly with Ross. Ross threatened. And he could have really have blown this place wide open, I think, had he really pursued, but it would have been very costly going through the courts and all, but what had been done to him and his family with these kinds of charges. I can be way off base, but I tend to believe that the Ross Hardy case brought the whole thing to a head.
Mm.
And when Roy Simpson found out that the administration on this campus had not really adequately covered all the bases in making the charges, and that the case was lost. And
now,
he looked ridiculous.
It was lost where?
Lost in the sense that Ross Hardy got reinstated. That is, he had a hearing, he had hearings. The hearings in which he was represented by Walter Desmond. And Ross could tell you a lot about Walter Desmond, and I'm and how gracious and kind he was, because he was keenly interested in this type of thing on a campus as well, really put together his case. And as Walter Desmond represented Ross Hardy, and I don't know who represented him, but somebody no doubt the State Board of the State Department of Education represented the administration. But in the hearings, the decision was made that Ross Hardy was cleared. As I understand it, Roy Simpson was greatly embarrassed that he had signed papers, you see, because they all went right to Sacramento, dismissing Ross Hardy, and now that had to be retracted.
Now, the hearings were legislative?
They were hearings, I believe, by the state, probably through state counsel, the State Department of Education and its legal counsel.
Mm.
But Ross would have to tell you. I never did attend any of the hearings, whereas I think there were some members of the faculty that did. I did not.
Now, were the students called to those
yes.
hearings? What kind of impact did that have on student-faculty relationship and on student morale?
I'm not able to gauge it fully, other than the fact that I think we had grown not that large, but we were up, and I couldn't tell you, I wish I could tell you the figures of our enrollment about that time. But it did not come to the point where students were that divided, at least as I saw them. Now, if you went to the Department of Biology or the field of the social or the natural sciences, you would definitely find out what kind of division there might have been among students there. And I suppose whether Ross Hardy wants to reveal names of students, I don't know. But he could tell you the students that testified against him, and he could give you names of students that testified in his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many students that testified in his behalf, many of whom were even present on occasions when these charges supposedly had been made. And so there was a rift, no doubt, because students really were caught. And there were some that Ross could name for you. I don't remember their names, but who were given these promises, and then they were caught in an embarrassing situation when Ross Hardy won his case. So as I see this period, I see the whole period from 1949 to 1959 as a case study in trying to understand the role of faculty and the role of the administration, and the faculty pursuing vigorously, and I mean vigorously, that its options in government be recognized.
Mm-hmm. Was there any meeting from the point at which Ross Hardy was reinstated to the point at which Simpson came and spoke to Peterson and there was the early retirement? Was there any meeting with this faculty group?
I'm sure the group might have met. It was an informal thing. You hated to formalize things because of the fact that it wouldn't have been recognized anyway. But I'm sure there must have been meetings, but I don't recall being present at them. There again, I think a Metzger, probably a Kimball, who incidentally dug in with both feet, more than I think.
It almost sounds as if the same pattern was followed, where to an extent what you were able to do was basically agitate and finally get someone to look at what was happening, but it was never in your hands or head.
Oh, no. It was actually, I think, a good case study in using forces off the campus to bring, quote, order to the campus.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what I would describe it.
So after all of these attempts to bring the forces in, basically from your point of view, the next move was the request for Peterson.
That's where I see it.
Yeah,
that's where I see it.
Do you recall from the standpoint that given the climate of the community and the fact that they probably basically felt that the charges were true, what happened, what was the response and reaction towards someone like Walter Desmond, who was an attorney in Long Beach?
That I would never know. I've never lived in Long Beach. And at that time, I had already moved over to Orange County. So I wouldn't know what the community reaction was. And I'm not sure that one could really find out, engage it fully, unless it'd be through the Chamber of Commerce. But the Chamber of Commerce really protected Peterson, too. Because there were some, I know, that had contacted Chamber of Commerce personnel to see, you know, are they aware of what's going on. So there was this attempt, first, really to work also, work in the community, work outside the community to get pressure to say something's got to be done. Are you aware of it? And I think the frustration with most faculty was we don't have the clout.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that ability to bring pressure. And yet we knew, I think most of us were realistic enough as students of history and political science and all to recognize it's a political thing. And the only way you're going to get pressure is through some political agency or some political mm-hmm. force or the force of a group of people. And really, it was experimental. And I think in the final analysis, the fact that they did a pretty good job. Mm-hmm. They weren't such babes in the woods as most believed. You know,
well, it's interesting. It sounds that really the decision was made at some point. Initially, there was the plan to try within the campus to get some form of governance. And when it was clear that could never happen,
mm-hmm.
that the obvious next step was
yes.
that that person had to leave.
That's
that
right.
The situation would never change while Peterson was still
That's
here.
Right.
Then you had almost increasing evidence of why he should
mm-hmm. why he should leave.
Leave.
That's right. In other words, it was basically saying there's evidence piling upon evidence that the situation has not been corrected. That which existed years ago still exists. How do we change it? And so you're looking for any kind of a catalyst that would be the instrument of change.
Tell me, when the announcement was made about Peterson's retirement, what did that do to the campus in terms of the division that you changed?
I can't really reconstruct the emotional climate at that moment. For many, it was almost unbelievable. It was as if, you know, there was something you had worked for years, and it, now it happened, and yet you had mixed emotions. You felt badly that a man, and this is, I'll just express my own feeling. I felt badly because I felt for a person, not for the person that occupied a position, but for an individual, a man who had given himself to education in the state of California for many, many years, since the period right after World War I, and I think he came to the state and completed his PhD at Stanford, and then part of the faculty in the educational setup at San Jose State. And my feeling, and I can almost reconstruct it at this moment, was this is a sad way for a man to have to retire by saying, I put in my years, and I feel, and you have to say, you know, I feel it's time for me to retire, not that I had been told mm-hmm. to retire. And I think he was about 65 at that time, which would be just about it. And to say I'm retiring and not to be able to go off on the crest of a high
mm-hmm.
wave, which is the way one's educational career should end.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, I felt very badly and really expressed, you know, I expressed to him my congratulations for the work he had done, but one had to be very cautious that he didn't overstate it. And yet at the same time, I realized that the only way this campus could change was a change in leadership. There was no other way. And I think that the people that surrounded him really felt, you know, that it was like a change of government in the cabinet. You know, what's happened to it? Do we resign? Do we stay with it? And of course, a number of people just wouldn't resign. They liked the jobs they had, but they wouldn't resign. And there again was part of the problem. And I think many would say that Peterson was not, his own enemies were the people that he sought, from whom he sought advice. They really, I think, did him in the sense that had Peterson surrounded himself through the years with what we might call the radical faculty and said, you know, I need to know what you're thinking, I need to know what you're feeling, I know what you're looking for. I'm going to try to accommodate you. I would like to say let's move slowly, but we're going to move.
Mm-hmm.
I think Peterson would have continued to have survived. But, and I'll not name any names, but there were administrators who basically liked to fight and really prodded Peterson to believe many things that probably were not fully the truth, could have been half-truths. And Peterson came to see most of these people as definitely enemies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good illustration, I think, in not just an academic community, but in any kind of a situation where communications break,
mm-hmm.
and they break down completely because lack of trust, lack of faith. and then each one building up the other as being the villain.
Yeah. Can you reconstruct when Ross Hardy won?
Mm-hmm.
At that point, were you all convinced that now it is going to really happen? Or was it not until...
No, I don't think we were convinced, at least I wasn't. I can't say about others. I was not convinced it was really going to happen. I was convinced that probably there would be greater caution when it came to reviewing faculty for promotion, mm-hmm. for tenure, for reappointment, and there would be great hesitation about firing faculty. And of course, in this case, this is a tenured mm-hmm. faculty member, Ross Hardy. So to me, it was at least a bright light at that moment on faculty administration relationships when it came mm-hmm. to decision making on faculty. But I never believed that it would lead to a change mm-hmm. in the office of the presidency of the campus.
Well, you saw the his rehiring as something that would improve the review process. Did you see it as increasing faculty governance being feasible then? Do you recall?
I don't recall that I really saw it in that light, mm-hmm. no. I saw that probably more input from faculty might be forthcoming.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case of Ross Hardy, you must remember also his division chairman and even some members of his own department plotted against him as well. So it was a combination, administration, some faculty against a faculty
mm-hmm.
member.
What was do you recall the time period between his rehiring and Peter Singer's resignation?
No, I don't.
That's
no.
easy
yeah.
enough.
Yeah, it's easy enough to check, and Ross is classic. That's all happened to him, so he could tell you. These are things that you know happened, but it's not like, you know, if I'd only written them down, I could go back and say, okay, these are the things that happened. But it's sort of like, you know, as I'm an historian, I remember how things developed, and unless I go back and just follow through things date by date, mm-hmm. I don't recall them in the exact order or the exact chronology. But there again, I think we're fortunate enough to have the person around who can really give mm-hmm. you, and, you know, probably, it could be likely that some nice things are in error, mm-hmm. you know, date-wise, I don't know.
Yeah. Are there anything else in the period up to the point of Peterson's retirement that you can think of?
I can't recall. Can't recall anything there other than the fact that I think I was still not happy in the sense of what I saw was going on, but I felt my teaching was my compensation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all I can say. And I think I'm an optimist at heart, and that is I believe that in a concept that I continue to live by, which is stated in these words, this too shall pass.